Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I apologize. I'm sorry, everybody. I had planned on recording a show yesterday. I had a pretty decent topic lined up, but my head was not going to let me do that. But as a trade-off, I brought Pete on. Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Magic Johnson told me to shut up today. How are you?
You know, I would have paid actual money to see everybody's response to that.
So the context is they were concluding the draft workout, and at the end of those, Luke gives closing comments to all of the prospects, and we're a pretty decent distance away. But I'm gonna blame this on Geeter, actually. You know Geeter a little bit. Geeter was there, and I was talking to Geeter. But if you know Geeter, it's more like Geeter was talking to me, And I think we may have gotten a little too rambunctious in that exchange, but Magic, like, from a distance turns, and in the facility, like, you're pretty far away from where Luke is having that conversation.
It is still a gym. Yes. Yeah. You got the acoustics there. Everything kind of like bounces around.
So Magic turns and like cups his mouth and he's like, excuse me. And then comes over and kind of, and he's like playfully is like, I'm not going to let you guys in the gym. If you continue to make noise, let me get some daps first. Right. So he comes over, he daps everyone up. Right. And he goes over to poor Joey Ramirez, Rodrigo Azarmendi, and says, I'm pretty sure it was coming from over here, guys. And it was one of those things where he was not like super serious, but he was serious. You know what I mean? Like he was polite about it. He was friendly about it, but it was like, no, seriously, shut up. <You know? laughs> And I'm pretty sure Joey and Rodrigo didn't do anything wrong. And it was myself and mostly Geeter making a little too much noise. And then of course Geeter comes over, you know, after Rodrigo and Joey get blamed for it. And Geeter comes over and daps me up. It's like, I think we got away with it. Like, yeah, I think we did. So that was my day so far. It's like 2 o'clock. So, you know, more can happen, but I think that's going to be the highlight of my day.
The funny thing about all of this and hearing all of this is, so like we talked, I think a few shows ago about, you know, guys who just kind of fill a room, and Magic is one of those guys. Like he's huge. He's huge in terms of like physically, he's a big dude, and in terms of personality. So I would imagine like getting the shush treatment from Magic, I would have shrunk. Like I would.
Oh, dude, it's some combination of like your dad slash childhood hero,
yeah,
slash like, you know, president of the favorite team. Yeah, like it was just this bizarre like I don't think I was being loud, but I can be loud for sure. I don't think I was the one that triggered it, but yeah.
You just never know. And you didn't get blamed for it anyway. But I picture that scene from Lord of the Rings where Gandalf like takes up the entire room and like really just his shadow gets cast over this entire room as he tells, I think it was Frodo, to like check himself or something like that. Magic Johnson tells everybody to shut up. All right, well that's a great place to start. Today's show, I guess we should eventually start talking about the Lakers or the NBA at some point. But today's show, we are going to talk about the J.R. Smith thing, and that's going to allow us to kind of dip back into fandom. I always like just kind of reminiscing over various moments in Lakers history or sports fandom history. So we're going to talk about moments where, like, if you were a Warriors fan, that was one of the better moments of the season. If you were a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, that was one of the worst moments of your life, right? And so we're going to that's what we're going to start with. We're going to relate that back to our various moments like that in sports fandom. Then we're going to use that to segue over to the latest of what's kind of been going on with LeBron in the finals and how it has benefited or hurt or if it's had any effect on the Lakers at all. And then finally, we're going to finish this conversation by discussing how different the vibe is around the Lakers as they head into free agency. I mean, we could be by the time you guys hear from Pete again, we're going to know to a pretty high extent whether or not how many shows we're going to have before we're fully into off-season mode. If this season could wrap up really, really quickly here. You guys know where to find the show. I don't want to waste any more time. Pete, let's go. Well, I'll just ask you right away. We'll start on the negative side. What's the moment for you that you were able to relate to Cleveland Cavaliers fans? Because that J.R. Smith play was one of the all-time blunders in NBA history. But do you have a moment like that as either a Laker fan or a sports fan, period?
Thankfully, there aren't too many mental mistakes that really rank up there. I'm a San Francisco 49er fan, and there is a fumble by Kyle Williams on a punt return. He fumbled like or muffed two punts mm-hmm. in the NFC Championship game, you know, a few years back that was just like he had no reason to muff those and he did. But like as a Laker fan, the one that stands out to me is like Lamar Odom walking the ball inbounds. But there were no stakes involved. Like obviously J.R. Smith is different because it's close game in the finals, right? Like it didn't matter. It was just one of those, what the hell are you doing type of things. So, I, you know, fortunate in that way from just like a gut punch standpoint, game four of the 2008 finals was really tough. The Lakers were at home down 2-1 to the Celtics and they were up by like 24 in the first half. Mm-hmm. And I was very briefly dating a girl at the time that was rooting for the Celtics just to mess with me. And I remember she called me at the end of the game and she was supposed to come over and she was like, yeah, I'm not even going to say anything. I know how you feel right now. I'm like that's beyond like screwing with you there. So for me, that's probably the biggest gut punch. That and I was little, but in the Lakers attempt to three-peat in 89, Magic and Byron Scott got hurt like right at the beginning of the finals and prevented it from being a, you know, competitive series at all. So just in terms of gut punches, and then of course Magic's HIV announcement, but that's kind of different than J.R. Smith. So how about you, man? What are the ones that stand out for you as a fan?
Well, that game, that 2008 game that you talked about was the first thing that came to mind. And I happened to be watching that game, the J.R. Smith game with my dad. And he said that wasn't quite reminiscent of the James Worthy pass in, what was it, 84? And you know, he said it wasn't quite the same, although it was a different variety because like the James Worthy pass happened, I think it was like after a timeout or it was coming from the sideline. So there was like build up and you're thinking, okay, we got this, and then we don't got this. It's we're gonna get one in Boston and then everybody's feeling great and then no. And so that was a bummer. But the other one that kind of comes to mind here too, and this will be how I send us to break. I'm a Dodgers fan, and Kenley Jansen giving up a home run in that World Series, or Clayton Kershaw giving up the home runs in Houston, like that. This entire last World Series was one giant. It wasn't a blunder. It wasn't a mental mistake in the way that J.R. Smith was, but just the entire World Series experience. Like I never want to go back. Like it was the kind of thing that made me not want to be a fan anymore.
Those are the types of losses where like it's hard to come back from. Even the next year, like there's a hangover to it.
Yeah, I completely. It was hard for me to like get back into the Dodgers, and then they sucked at the beginning of the year, so that didn't. You know, it was like the hangover continued. So fortunately, they've kind of picked things up. We are going to pick things up when we come back here, and we're going to talk about the other side of it and kind of laugh at other teams. I have a story that I always go to here. Sorry, Baylen, if you're listening. That's how we're going to open this up next segment. So my best man is a Kings fan. He is he loved like Peja and Chris Webber, and before it was Jason Williams, then it became Mike Bibby, like that entire team, and him and like all of NBA Twitter. Like that's everybody's seemingly favorite team. He called me, was it game six of that? And then like, I think game seven was the one that everybody cries about the refereeing, but game six of that, I think it was 2007 Kings or 2001 Kings series.
It was 2002, and so game six was the one with the refereeing controversy. And then game five was like just as bad refereeing wise, but the Lakers lost that game, so nobody cares about that. Shaq shot one free throw that game and fouled out. Don't get me started. Anyway,
was
go
that,
ahead.
Was that the one where he was like he cussed to John Ireland at the end of the he said I don't give a shit, find me for what you want, and John Ireland's like, Shaq, you're on live television, I don't give a and
yeah. I don't remember if it was that game. I think that was a regular season game, but I could be wrong on that, yeah, on that Shaq one. But yeah, like that, that was a ridiculous game, that game five. And like the last possession, Bobby Jackson pulling on Kobe's jersey, like as Kobe's going up for the shot, like it was just an awful game. And like, you're talking prime Shaq shooting one free throw in 30 minutes and fouling out of a game. Anyway. Yeah.
Who remembers any of this stuff?
Yes, you digress, please.
So the Lakers, I believe they were down before that possession, right? Before the Ori shot. They were losing before when that possession started, or they were tied, or they were losing heading into that possession at some point, because it was a close kind of back and forth game. And Balin, who served as my best man at my wedding, he called me, and he was just – he wasn't quite gloating, but you could kind of tell, like, hey, bud, sorry, bud. You know, the Lakers played well. You guys are going to be right there again next season. I said, Balin, don't mess this up. Don't talk your shit before this thing's actually over. And then Lottie sends out that perfect pass to Robert Horry. Horry makes it, and I called him back. And I got an answer from his mom. I didn't even get to like talk my trash back. She said that it was probably not in everybody's best interest that Balin hopped back onto the phone. But that to me was like, it was an incredible pass from Vlade Divac. One of the best passes I have really ever seen. Is there a moment like that for you?
In terms of like for another team, kind of laughing at their misery.
Well, right. Well, because it was. The J.R. Smith thing, it was a blunder and all that stuff, but it was also, like, it was extremely lucky. George Hill missed that free throw. Like, that's what people don't quite also realize, is that, like, George, they had to have the combination of the two events. George Hill misses a free throw, and J.R. Smith gets a rebound and thinks he's supposed to just dribble out the clock. So you're sitting there as a Warriors fan who's already the favorite in that kind of situation, and then you get to laugh at the lowly Cavaliers. Do you have a moment where you could kind of – that you can remember just kind of laughing at the team that the Lakers were playing at the time, or team?
It's not a Laker one, but in the 90s, I would kind of get irritated about how much love the Knicks would get. Like, they would be just like a decent second-round team, right? And they were always these title contenders, and they really weren't, right? For whatever reason, during the 90s, the Knicks annoyed me. So Reggie Miller scoring 8 points in 9 seconds, and if you watch that tape, it's like – this total comedy of errors where like Greg Anthony's falling down. Anthony Mason is like throwing the ball and just, it was just like everything. It was this comedy of errors. And then I don't think it was that same series. I think it was a different series. Do you remember when Charles Smith had like 4 or 5 shots right at the rim for the Knicks,
yeah,
in the last seconds of the game and just couldn't get it?
Yeah.
There was a play, you know how Toronto just can't get by Cleveland in game one at the end of regulation. They had like all these shots right around the rim, and Valanciunas like just couldn't put the ball in the basket, and a couple of the other guys. It was kind of like that. That was the Charles Smith play. So those are two of my probably biggest examples of kind of what, you know, Schadenfreude type situations where I'm laughing at other people's misery.
You know what you and I should do sometime, or what you should do if it's like if we're really hurting for content, or you can't find an idea to break down video or something. But there's a clip on YouTube. I think it's a two-part thing, but where the Lakers open up the game beating the Sacramento Kings like 40-1 or something like that.
It was 40-4. That was in 87, I think
it was. It's incredible. It's one of my favorite clips of all time. You have Chick Hearn, who just anytime you get to listen to Chick Hearn call a game, it makes everything better. But he's telling their coach at that time, call a timeout, buddy. Send in a sub.
I think he put it in the refrigerator in the first quarter.
He did.
He was such a G. That's like my one regret. If I could transfer Chick Hearn over into the modern era, like he would be so popular. I mean, he was back in the day. But I think a lot of times when we look back at the past, it can be through those rose-colored glasses. Like Chick, if you go on YouTube and listen to old calls of Chick, that dude was fire. He was just like machine gun calling every little detail. like hugely influential for me in terms of like noticing all of the little things that happen in a game. Like Chig would be so popular today. It's one of my, you know, biggest regrets is that he wasn't around for the modern era.
Yeah, it's actually funny because you and I'm sure you and I have had this conversation even on the show where we talk about guys whose game would really translate to this modern NBA, but we never even thought of Chick Hearn.
Like, just listen to him, man. Like, so what he used to do a simulcast, which meant that he had to do radio and TV at the same time. So he was being really descriptive as though it were for radio. And you, even if you listen to radio now, it's not all that descriptive, but he was just telling everything that would happen while being funny and observant just in all at once. And yeah, he was just the best.
And it never felt like it was too much. Like that's what, to me, when I remember, when I look back on his calls, it just never, he was talking at all times and he was still really good at giving Stu Lance his opportunities to speak it well, but it never felt like it was just over the top. There were some play-by-play guys where I'm just like, shut up by the end of it. Right. And I never, if I ever thought that, my dad would have slapped me upside the head. So it really didn't dawn on me, but especially back then. All right, we kind of went a little long on that last segment, so we're going to quickly take a second here. When we come back, we'll talk about LeBron, and then we'll let that kind of segue into the third part of our conversation, which is where the Lakers currently sit and how that's different from years past. So that if the Cavs win that game one, if George Hill makes a free throw, or if J.R. Smith just looks at a clock, that's the weirdest thing to me, was that as all that was going on, every single player usually as they're walking onto the court looks up at the scoreboard or looks up at the time. Like that's usually what you do as a player as you're walking onto a court, especially in a big moment. But for some reason, I guess he just blindfolded himself and stood there next to KD. But that play might wind up being a huge help to the Lakers, right?
Yeah, I mean, did you see the footage, the timeout footage of him sitting on the bench and then asking the coaching staff if they had a timeout left and then finding out that they did?
Oof, man.
Did you get a chance to see it?
Yeah, I did. It's honestly like a gut punch because I've said this on the show. I care deeply about good basketball and great players and great talents, and like watching LeBron's, like, just he collapses back onto the chair.
Yeah, it was just like his I'm surrounded by idiots moment, you know? Like, and to be fair, he should have known that they had a timeout too.
Yeah.
Right. And that being said, there's probably some in the moment, like, you know, when J.R. Smith got that offensive rebound and he started, I thought he was dribbling out to the 3-point line to shoot a step back three. Because what would be more J.R. Smith than the game's tied, I get an offensive rebound, you know, 8 feet away from the hoop, I'm making a beeline to the 3-point line to shoot a three. Like, that's what I thought he was doing in the moment. So in LeBron and even the coaching staff's defense, there was probably some degree of, wait, what the hell's going on,
right,
type of, that prevented the timeout from being called. But just if you watch LeBron's body language, like, to me, not to be overly dramatic, because I didn't think this was going to be a series anyway, but the series probably ended right in that moment. Like, the body language in that whole exchange is just off the charts.
I mean, overtime, I almost felt like they didn't even need to play overtime. And then I thought it was you know, notable or noble that they hung in there for game three for as long as they did. But eventually Golden State kind of put them to bed. You and I had this conversation. I thought it was going to be a close series. I don't feel that way anymore. It's over now. But again, just for us selfishly, for people who want LeBron to wind up in LA, like this is how that has to happen, right? Like, if you can't have a close series and also think LeBron is going to come to the Lakers, although, you know, maybe it doesn't have an effect on him at all. And then there's a report recently, or just today as we're recording this, from Tanya Ganguly that people around him are saying that he's going to go where he is most likely to win a championship. And my question, I guess, to you here is, do the Lakers weigh into that aspect of the conversation?
I think we talked about this a little bit last time. I think that Houston and Philly has a better case. I've been talking to people recently, though, and not always Laker fans. I try and the best I can to the people that I do know around the league that are able to give perspective. They actually think the Lakers have a better case than I think I do. One of the concerns, like with Philly, is how do Ben Simmons and LeBron play together? Mm-hmm. You know, LeBron's going to be LeBron, but what is Ben Simmons doing if he doesn't have the ball in his hands? And LeBron has said that he doesn't want to play as on ball as much, but come playoff time, damn sure LeBron's going to have the ball in his hands, right?
Right.
So what does Ben Simmons do during that? And being a guy that's never made a three in his career, you know, is he just able to, does he become a power forward at that point? Is he just a cutter? Like, kind of what is his role within all of that? He'd still be a good player, but you probably lose a good degree of what makes him really valuable, which is as a 6'9", 6'10", type playmaker. Houston, I don't know if Houston blows it up for LeBron. There are a few moving parts there that are tough, with like the Ryan Anderson contract needing to be moved. They promised Chris Paul before the season that they were going to go all in and sign him to a contract that is going to be pretty absurd by the end of it. Do they stay true to their word? Do they back out on that? They can still re-sign Chris Paul and make some other moves, but there are a lot of moving parts that would have to make to go a certain way for Houston to pull that off. So I don't know, like if Paul George is in the fold, I think, I don't know. I'm starting to get talked into the idea that the Lakers could in fact be the best, or right there neck and neck with other guys and other teams in terms of the best basketball situation for them.
I think the other factor here to put the Lakers into that conversation is the amount of flexibility that they have, right? Like he can come over here with another superstar. They do have the young assets who might be able to convince, you know, a San Antonio if they think Kawhi isn't going to stick around, or whatever, whichever other player that LeBron might want to play with, they might be able to swing a trade there and vault the Lakers into that a little bit more firmly into that conversation. Here's the thing. Like if it really is only about championships, just go to Golden State. He could just go to Golden State, right? And it's almost impossible because of the cap work, the way that the cap works out and all that stuff. But there, I don't, to kind of make the point that immediately popped up to me when I saw that report, was there is no place that is head and shoulders above any other non-Golden State situation where he can win a championship. Like that place just doesn't quite exist. Every other place has legitimate questions about what might that situation look like if and when he does go there. So in that regard, it was one of those reports where you say, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, we've kind of known that all along. I do want to, though, like, here's the thing that for Laker fans, unless you had anything else to add on that point, but go ahead.
Yeah. One thing, I think the thing about Golden State, and you touched on this with Durant on the last time I was on, is it's the only place where he could go where if they win a championship, he wouldn't be the one that got credit for it.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that matters to LeBron, but that's the only place he could go where he wouldn't be seen as the reason that they won the title.
All right. Random detour point. It's fascinating to me that whichever super team, no matter how crazy talented the super team might be, is going to be welcomed with open arms completely because of how good Golden State is. Like if Durant stays in Golden State, as most expect him to, even I mostly expect him to, but if LeBron stays, or if Durant stays in Golden State, you could, LeBron, Chris Paul, Paul George, Kawhi, Anthony Davis, I feel like the NBA fandom at large would be kind of annoyed because we know what the conference finals is going to look like, and eventually who's going to come out of the West, and the East is still going to be so far behind the West if that team does take place in the West. But it doesn't matter where that team takes place, what it might look like, everybody is really focused on the Warriors losing here because of, I guess for lack of a better term, the smack in the face that Durant's jump to Golden State felt like, and only continues to feel more like as he has subpar games and still wins game one against Cleveland in the finals.
They wouldn't embrace it if it was the Lakers, though, Anthony. Like,
you think?
You've made this point, man.
Yeah,
how many childhoods have the Lakers ruined who are now spiteful bloggers and writers who take chip shots at the Lakers and anything that they do every chance that they get. If the freaking Lakers end up with LeBron and say they trade for Kawhi and Paul George, like there will be people openly rooting for Golden State to three-peat and hope that this version crashes and burns like the Dwight and Steve Nash Lakers did. You know, like I think you really got to the center of it when you talked about like ruining childhoods. I think there are a lot of basketball fans in their 20s and 30s who ended up crying as an 11-year-old to sleep because, you know, that like the story you relayed with the Kings with your friend, like how many people did the Lakers do that to? How does that guy feel about the Lakers today as a grown man?
He is not fond.
Yeah, exactly.
And here's hoping that the Lakers do put together a super team and ruin some Golden State Warrior childhoods. Like that's what I'm hoping for, really. Yeah. Sorry, children.
Ruined childhood since 1960, yeah.
All right, last point we make on here before we send everybody out of here. I do think it's worth noting that, you know, last time Kevin Durant or LeBron or any those that type of superstar was available, the Lakers didn't factor into the conversation even a little bit, right? It was Durant didn't even take a meeting, and if LeBron did, it was one of those like, oh yeah, that's cute kind of meetings, right? And even the next lower tier down type stars, like LaMarcus Aldridge, took multiple meetings because the first meeting was so embarrassing that they had to take another one to kind of make up for it and save face. And I think it's worth noting here, and this is one of the things that I'm going to say throughout this offseason, how different the vibe is around the Lakers, that there's any kind of legitimate belief whatsoever that LeBron might leave an actual title team, a team that is contending for a title right now, to come to LA. That there are people out there who do think that, and there are whispers that don't even start in the Bay, or don't even start in LA. They start in the Bay, and they've kind of filtered their way down to me, that people think that Durant is a possibility. And like, that to me, like Sabrina, for Silver Screen and Roll, Sabrina Merchant wrote an article about how Lakers exceptionalism is back, and it feels great. Like everything seems a little more right in the world. But would you agree, or would you roll with the feeling of just how different everything feels right now?
Bro, the Lakers won 35 games.
Yeah.
There's like, we have no business having these conversations on merit. And it really speaks to like the Charlotte Hornets won more games than the Lakers did this year. They won 36, right? It speaks to the power of brand equity. And as much as you disliked it, that Kobe contract extension mattered, where he tore his Achilles and they still lived up to their word and they still did right by him. And they gave him the Viking funeral of his last year, and especially that last game. Those little things matter. And when the Lakers go into these free agency meetings with those mega stars, those super, super stars, very top of the league type of guys, and they can look them dead in the eye and say, we're going to take care of you, and we're going to treat you right, and we're going to provide the best situation for you. And they can do that with full well knowing that they've done that in the past and that they've lived up to their word on that. So despite the fact that they've won 35 games, like they can honestly look those guys in the eye and say that and be believed.
And it's not just about city, right? Because some people are going to, well, it's Los Angeles.
No, it's not. Yeah.
It was really funny. I loved how it all played out. But at that time, there was some talk that after the Blake Griffin trade, that the Clippers were going to try to get in on these LeBron sweepstakes. And like almost like a day later, we heard from people who were close to LeBron, no. I thought that was tremendous. But that's what you're talking about. The brand equity, the trust in, and look, like Colangelo stuff doesn't happen with the Lakers, right? Like there were a bunch of people on Twitter who got all kinds of angry at me because I floated out the idea there, the theory or hypothesis that I don't think all NBA teams are capable of winning a championship, whether that comes back to ownership or market or past history, whatever it might be, that there are just some cities out there. And I think I said this after that game one that you were talking about with Toronto, after they lost in the fashion that they lost. Like I kind of wondered, are there some cities out there who cannot, are not capable of winning titles? And if there, if somebody was to grant me that side of the thinking, well, then the next step in that thinking is, well, there are some cities that are just better at winning titles. And the Lakers are almost inarguably the latter. And that's where this is all coming from and where Lakers exceptionalism comes from. And this upcoming offseason for both the Lakers and the Dodgers is going to be really, really interesting. Could be really exciting, could be hugely disappointing. But the next few months are going to be extremely telling about the future of both of these organizations.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's something that, again, they've put in, you know, being around this facility, so many of the people there have been there for a very long time. There's a way to look at that positively and a way to look at that negatively, but the Lakers are old money in the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. You talk about like in New York, in Manhattan, there are parts of the town, of the borough that are old money, where people that have had money in their family for generations, and people that have made it new. This isn't the Lakers organization's first rodeo by any means. And there are a lot of people that are in their positions that were in their, those positions when during the glory days. And even if you look at a guy like Magic Johnson, right, who we neither of us have always been completely confident at his abilities as an executive, but there's no denying that he has been there and done that, and he can look a guy like LeBron in the eye again and be like, I am one of maybe five people on the planet that know what you're going through and what you're about to go through in terms of being the biggest star in the sport of basketball and trying to build a brand and build your industries outside of it. You know, how many people can talk to LeBron on that level in basketball?
Very – nobody currently in basketball, right? Maybe Michael, right? But
and that matters.
Well, it matters, but Michael is would be having that conversation as head of the Charlotte Bobcats. So like they're
a little
they're,
different.
There is nobody, yeah, to your point, there is nobody who could have the conversation from the perch atop the Lakers who could also relate to the heights that LeBron is currently at right now. That's going to play a huge factor. All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Again, apologies for not making it yesterday. I've been trying to churn out five shows a week despite the lack of topics and stuff to talk about. But thank you very much, Pete, for hopping on here. We'll find something else to talk about as we get ready for Friday as well. Check out Pete's breakdown of Mitchell Robinson. I think for the vast majority of Laker fans out there, he was a complete no-name kind of guy, and Pete broke down why the Lakers might be interested, what type of red flags might be hanging or might be around there as well. Really good job there. Check out all the stuff on Silver Screen and Roll. You can follow me on Twitter at AnthonyOwenLA. You can follow Pete on Twitter at Laker Film Room. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Lakers. I'm hoping to have another kind of announcement regarding Locked On Lakers here in the next couple days or maybe week or so. So keep an eye out for that. Keep sending those iTunes questions. You guys are the greatest with that stuff. We get some really good ones. I really appreciate it. Pete, you actually helped respond to one of them with the how you watch games and stuff. So send that stuff. Keep on following the show. We'll talk to you tomorrow.